Is this thing on? Take down that top knot, loosen that tie, close your laptop, and say goodbye to your email for the day. Let's go grab a drink and cheers. This is the Drinks After Work podcast, and I'm your host, Tiffany Callahan.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to another episode of the Drinks After Work podcast. Today, my guest is Lena Forrestal, and we talk all about influencer marketing. Lena works for Cisco Webex as an influencer marketing manager, and she works directly with influencers promoting the Webex brand. But also, Lena herself is an influencer. She started in the travel blogger space, and then she transitioned more to the mommy and lifestyle influencer realm. This conversation was fascinating to me because Lena was able to give the perspective of both sides of the field. She opens up about some of the issues that she sees as a creator when it comes to working with brands, and she also shares some tips both for companies looking to work with influencers and for those looking to start in the creator and influencer industry themselves. We also talk a lot about how rapidly the marketing and social media industry has been changing. We talk about Lena's life abroad before she lives on a farm now. We talk about her podcast, The New Mama's Podcast, and how amazing of a resource it has been for me as a new mom. And finally, as always, we wrap up with a quick little game and some fun questions. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you do, please don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Now, let's get into it. Cheers!
So, a little bit about me. Right now, my current state is I work full-time for Cisco Webex as their influencer marketing program manager. And then I like to say by mid-afternoon, I am a motherhood blogger, photographer, and podcast host of the New Mamas podcast. And I'm an influencer myself, but I am not originally a motherhood influencer blogger. I started off in travel and food, which we'll get into. But it's really interesting because right now my perspective is both from the influencer side and then also from the brand side. So that's been a really interesting learning in my, I feel like my life now, I eat, live and breathe influencer stuff, which isn't the worst thing because it is definitely all the rage.
Yeah, definitely. It's like one of the buzzwords right now is influencer marketing. So
yeah.
It's good that you have both sides of it, I think, because you can bring unique perspectives to it.
Yeah. And I was actually hired because I'm an influencer, which it's bad because I cringe a little bit when I say I am an influencer. And it's something I'm trying to learn not to do, because I guess what I really want to say is I'm a creator. And through that creation, I have influenced people, or you just become, I feel like the word influencer, everybody has a different picture in their mind when they think about that, what that person looks like, breathes like, acts like. So I think that's really interesting. In my job interview at Cisco, the last interview that really mattered, the CMO didn't want to know. I started to talk to her about my career journey, and she was like, yeah, pull up your Instagram. And I sweat so much when I was doing that, because I was like, oh, so she's like, yes, share your screen and show me your Instagram. And show me all the brands that you've worked with. And I want you to talk about them and what those partnerships look like. And that was
nerve-wracking.
Yeah, that was super nerve-wracking because, you always usually when you're interviewing for a job, the stuff that you do personally, it's always like work and that like your professional life and then your personal life. But definitely with social media today, there's absolutely a blend of that whole personal, professional. I feel like if you decide to have a public profile, you're always in some way representing the brand you work for or representing your own brand, your personal brand. So it's really interesting. That was the most interesting interview, but I guess I did well because I am employed by Cisco running their influencer marketing programs. And I have a background in social media. For everyone listening, I've been in the social space for 9 years. So it's something that I understand conceptually, like the fundamentals and the infrastructure of social media marketing. And I think that really helps in designing a lot of these influencer marketing programs.
And you went to Bentley, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I just saw that on your LinkedIn profile. My best friend went to Bentley, which is kind of funny because I was it's a school I'd never heard of before until she talked about it. And then I saw it. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, how funny. Yes. So in New Jersey, Bentley is not very popular, but up in Massachusetts, no. like in the New England area, Bentley's a really popular small business school. So it's funny when I say Bentley around here, everyone's like, what? But then yeah. up in Boston, everyone's like, oh, you went to Bentley. Like everybody usually knows someone that went to Bentley. So
yeah,
funny.
That's so funny. Yeah. So it was really funny for me because I was like, oh, I actually know someone that went there. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Did you
personal connection?
Yeah. Did you study social media marketing there or just general marketing? And then you kind of fell into the social media marketing world?
No. Fun fact. I had a marketing research professor tell me that social media was going away in 5 years and to not even waste my time on it. And this was, I went to college 2007 to 2011. So I graduated in 2011. And
okay, me too.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. Yay. Okay. Yeah. So that was a fun fact. I studied marketing. Bentley is a predominantly accounting and finance school. So I was one of the few people that studied marketing. And we were often told that we were going to be poor at this school because we were not going into corporate finance and accounting. But I think I'm doing okay today.
Yeah, I think so.
But I literally remember sitting in a seminar. They were trying to convince people to take their accounting track. And they said, if you do marketing, you will not be able to survive on one income in your family or something like that. And it was truly atrocious. Like thinking of the world we're in today, 2021, like it's truly atrocious. Like that seminar.
I love that they tried to convince you that social media is going to go away too. And now look at where we are, where it's basically ruling our entire life.
Yes, I know. I'm shocked as well, but I think there's a lot of old school marketers out there that were very skeptical of social media when it was first, you know, bubbling from becoming that it was starting to be for like, sorry, blah, 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 blah. It was at that point in 2011, I think a lot of companies knew they needed to be on social media. That was the mindset that we should probably check out the social media thing. And then it was interesting. I think around 2015, 2016, it started to become, we need to do social media well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, it's just interesting to see how the social media maturity has gone throughout these different companies. And there are some that are extremely mature. They have entire social teams. They have content engines that support them. And then there are other companies where social media is still managed by one person, which is mm-hmm. insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's limiting. Yeah.
Exactly. It definitely is. I also think it's something to do with the environment within colleges too. Like you tend to have these people who teach these courses that are a little bit out of touch with everything going on in the world. And it's one of those things where actually, so I had the opportunity to do like adjunct teaching.
Cool.
I did it for the school that I went to, Seton Hall, for a little bit. I taught graphic design and stuff like that. And it was really interesting because my professor that I'm still friends with and I still help out was like, you should think about doing like going back, getting your master's and becoming like a marketing professor on the side. And I was like, yeah, I would love to do that. However, I don't believe in learning to like just going off to check the box for getting a master's. And every single master's program that I've ever found, and really even when I think back to my college education for marketing in general, it's all these antiquated like ideas. Yeah. And it's not really, you're not learning like the marketing of today, for example. And it was someone telling me, you know, in one of the master's curriculums that I looked into, like they were talking about social media marketing, but they were talking about it at like such a basic level from like when social media first started, not how it's developed today. And so it's interesting because I feel like it's something that's been so antiquated. We talk about it, but like, in order to keep up with the trends, you really need to. Marketing is such a fast-paced environment that it's not something that you can put down. If it's in a textbook, it's already too late. It's too old.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Think about how much has changed in social media in just the last year.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like so it's interesting how you bring up how, yeah, they teach these archaic principles in colleges. And what's happening is that companies need social media employees, right? They are looking for your social media professional, But because there's no education to support that, a lot of people think, oh, because I do social media personally, I can do it for a brand. And that's often not the case. Like there's actually a huge difference between using it personally and then using it for a business. So what's happening is we're just not, there's a lack, I think, in social media professionals. It's really hard to find junior talent that knows how to write copy, understands the basics of social media strategy, understands tone of voice, even basic graphic design. I'd love to hear your perspective of like things like Canva, but I think Canva's really been able to elevate the type of social media posts that we put out there. And yet a lot of people don't know how to use them because I think colleges don't really promote the use of all these digital tools.
No, not at all. Most colleges don't even know the use, like that these tools exist.
Huge problem.
Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with you. And I think that there's something, I actually just saw this posted on one of my, one of the accounts that I follow. And it's like social media management and social media content creation are generally lumped into the same job. And I don't think that they should be because there's two completely different things. And they like, in order to be a successful content creator and in order to be a successful social media manager, you almost need to dedicate both your full time to both of those different things. Especially from like an established brand perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you need to have that content marketing engine, which is a totally separate industry, to be able to support the social media activities that happens on a brand perspective. And of course, there's always, I think it's great for social media marketers to have that, the fundamentals of content marketing and content creation, to be able to do like timely posts, right? Like using the Oreo during the Super Bowl example, like almost having a newsroom, right? So you have something that you can, okay, this is trending. How can we hop on this trend in an authentic way? It's great for you to be able to not have to rely on your content marketing team and be able to turn that around in-house really quickly just within your own team. But yeah, a lot of these job roles are social media and content marketing, which that's a huge job to fill for one person. And what happens is I think a lot of companies hire that person and they're disappointed at how that one person can't scale those programs. It's impossible to be able to scale social media and content marketing if you don't have a team. But a lot of people think it's just one job.
I agree. I mean, even when you break it down, right? You were kind of talking about there's copywriting and then there's graphic design and then there's the actual management of it. Like there's so many different roles within the one role and we're expecting one person to be the master at all of it. I'm great. I can say that I'm a pretty decent graphic designer. I'm a horrible, horrible, horrible copywriter. I don't know the first thing about writing copy. However, like if I was to go out there and get a job in social media, I would have to know the ins and outs of social media management, of the different tools and insights and analytics that I'd have to do and understand, which that's a whole separate thing, and reporting and optimizing. And I'd have to create the content and then I'd have to write the copy for it. It's just, to me, the people that do that are like superheroes and unicorns because I would not be able to do that.
Yeah, but why aren't and maybe it's changed and maybe we just don't know, but maybe the college, I feel like college should have a track for social media. And you should learn to use all the tools, right? Hootsuite, Sprinklr, because that's when you go into a job interview, that's what hiring managers are looking for. They're going to give you a test. They're probably going to give you a couple pieces of content. They're going to ask you to write copy, ask how you would position and post these on different channels, because writing copy for LinkedIn is not the same as writing it for Twitter.
Nope.
And so it is really interesting. And when I first started out, so going back into my career journey, I started off as a social media community manager, and I did a lot of that. I did a lot of writing copy. I used to funnel. I worked for Liberty Mutual Insurance. So we used to use a tool. So people would complain on social media, as they often do, and then I would route that to our social media customer care team. I think it was pretty advanced at that time. Oh, gosh. I don't remember what year that was. 2014 maybe. I think it was pretty advanced at that time that we had a social care team, because a lot of companies still don't have it. I worked for a healthcare company that, you know, me trying to send customer complaints to our support team, they didn't know what to do with it. So I thought it was advanced at that time, but that was where I started off in social.
And how did you, okay, let's talk through your career. At what point did you dive into the influencer space? And you said yes. You started with like travel and photography and food.
Yeah. So I'll back up. So on my professional life, when I started influencer marketing, I don't even think it was a buzzword at that time. So in 2015, I worked for a tech company called CA Technologies. And one of the channels that I managed was all of our corporate Twitter channels. I started working with tech influencers to host Twitter chats. And that was sort of the way I used to go in. I started off doing influencer marketing, was creating these relationships with these individuals who were influential in the technology space to partner mm-hmm. with my brand, CA Technologies, to have a chat around a specific topic. So it could have been API security. It could have been we talked about tech trends, cryptocurrency. Okay. So that's how I started professionally working with influencers, and then also leveraging them for our events space. So we would invite influential people in the tech sphere. And these were bloggers. These were contributors to publications. And they were people who worked on their personal brands on Twitter. So they would have huge followings on Twitter. And we would invite them to our events. And at their events, they would live tweet and mm-hmm. share about our event and all the new things coming out. So professionally, that's how I started working with influencers without even really knowing that the term that what I was doing was influencer marketing. So yeah. That was and the whole concept behind that is, as a brand, you have this audience, right, that your social media team has built over time. And it's just I'm envisioning it. So for people listening, it's a circle, like your brand, and in the larger circle outside is your audience. Yep. Now, through paid social, you can reach another audience, right? But through influencer marketing, you are really reaching an audience that you would normally have be able not to reach on your own,
right,
unless you target them through paid. So, and we can talk about using all these different tools like paid social and influencer marketing, because I think the best recipe for success in influencer marketing is not just organic influencer marketing. So paying, you know, Tiffany to post about you on Instagram, but paying Tiffany to post on Instagram and then promoting your post as a brand. Yep. And you've probably seen that before in your mm-hmm. own social media travels. But
yep.
That's the best way for a brand to leverage influencer marketing. A lot of brands make the mistake, and you probably get these DMs too, that everything is free. Like, oh, mm-hmm. we'll just send this person this lip gloss for free, and then
for exposure.
It. Yeah, and that's not always that's not the best strategy. So then shifting to my personal influencer marketing journey. So my husband and I got married in 2017. And in the year after, basically, yeah, a couple months after, we needed to move to Thailand for him to pursue his PhD field research in ethnomusicology. So he studied, wow. Yeah, so in Muay, so the sport Muay Thai, if you're familiar with it, it's Thai kickboxing. There's often a band that accompanies the music. So when there's a fight, these musicians are sitting there playing a tune. And so that's...
Wow, I had no idea.
I know, fun fact. So that's what my husband was studying. So we moved to Thailand for his field research. And while I was in Thailand, my company, CA Technologies, got acquired and I was on my own. So I was unemployed. I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll just lean into my passions, which I loved blogging. I loved photography. I loved doing videos. So I had a YouTube channel. I was travel blogging. And then I was doing stuff, the huge on Instagram, the whole travel blogger thing. And yep. through that, I started to build an audience. And because I had a lot of time on my hands, I did spend a lot of time in the DMs, like building relationships, messaging people. And I think through that, I really grew my audience and I took them home with me. So I have a lot of people that have followed me, like in my beginning days of living in Thailand, and have kind of followed my or been with me in this journey as I like went, moved abroad, came home, cried a lot because it was such like a reverse culture shock. Moving from back from Asia was so challenging at first, and then getting pregnant. Yeah, it was it was hard.
Can we dive into that? What was the hardest part about it?
I think the hardest part about it was things are really easy and safe in Western culture. And what I mean by that is when we lived in Bangkok, like there was, you know, tons of traffic, lots of motorbikes on the road, lots of cars, lots of traffic. There was just a lot of the usual vibrance that a city brings. But then just, you know, you have the street vendors, you have like the nightlife. There's just a lot of noise all the time. And I guess I just kind of missed that hustle and bustle. And it didn't help that we lived in an apartment complex and we made all these friends with all these expats. So we would always be getting together with friends. And when we moved home, we lived in my in-laws' backyard in their RV. So it was just a really huge shock, like coming home and just life being a little bit quieter. Even though that's what I wanted, it was just a shock to be able to like not... Like I was so used to calling like a bike taxi on my phone to like bring me from point A to point B. And here I like got in my car and drove myself places. It was just like, and I just wasn't used to that anymore. Like the very structured routine life.
That's interesting that you say that because I was wondering what the biggest difference was because it's not like you moved from Bangkok or from Thailand that you've lived there your entire life. You've really only been there for a few years and then you moved home and that's when you had the big culture shock, which is so crazy. You would think that it'd be the other way around. Going to Thailand and being in a completely new culture would be the biggest culture shock. So that's the reason I was asking. And I think it's interesting what you're saying that it's not really just like, because there is something to leaving a big city and going to a rural environment and, you know, being in going from, you know, constant noise 24/7 to crickets in your backyard.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was probably more than that too, right? Like I've never heard of ordering a bike taxi, for example. Like
Yeah, it was so much more. It was like the bike taxi. It was every 3 months, not even actually, even like every 2 weeks, like my husband and I would be on a plane to a different part of Thailand or to another country in Southeast Asia. We were traveling a lot. And I think that was the biggest difference was just that constant going somewhere, doing something, content planning, like to the normal life, which is what I love. And today I am like, we live on a farm. I told you, like you introduced me in the beginning, like we live on a farm. It's a very stable, it's a beautiful, I love being out here. It's a beautiful life. But there are times where I do think about just our life in Bangkok. And I can't help but smile because even though it was really hard, it's blistering hot in Thailand. So if you're not used to the heat, which I hated, the heat was one of the things I hated the most when I lived there. Oh, and actually another fun fact, this is like totally culturally different. So at 8 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night, everybody stops and listens to the national anthem. So if you're running at the park,
that's cool.
Yeah. So imagine you're at the park with your kid and you're like running. At 6 o'clock, the national anthem will start playing and everyone needs to stop and stay very still and listen to it. And that it's surreal. It's very, very interesting. And it's just so interesting. It's like little things like that that you almost kind of miss.
I was gonna say, so like when you were home, did you ever like happen to look at the clock and be like, oh, I'm supposed to stop what I'm doing now?
Yeah. Sometimes it would turn 6 o'clock and I'd be like, because I remembered I was home. And yeah, we weren't there. Right. I wasn't there my whole life. It was just for two years. But because we integrated ourselves so much in the culture and in living there and traveling there, I just felt like it became home really quickly.
That's awesome. That's so cool that you're able to integrate that quickly. It's in a span of 2 years. So, okay. I want to talk a little bit about, you were able to cultivate this crazy, this is the dog. She will jump up and down. I'm hoping that she doesn't go freak out because that's annoying, but whatever. We'll deal with it. You're able to cultivate this community online and become this influencer through your travel photography and basically travel content. And you had people that you started to gain traction with while you were there. And then you started touching on it, how they've kind of evolved with you and taken the journey with you moving back home. And then now you're basically like a lifestyle and mommy influencer. How did you make that shift, and how did you kind of continue to develop the relationships and expand on that a little bit? Because I think that's like super, super interesting. It's, you know, you think normally when you're a brand, and even when you're starting to develop tactics as a business in general, you think you have to focus on one niche, you have to constantly stay in one market. But for someone like you, you've been able to kind of adapt your following and continue your following with you throughout the different phases of your life and to something, two completely different things, obviously. So how have you been able to do that?
Yes. So I will be super transparent in saying that I lost a lot of followers when I pivoted. So yes, going from travel to food content to motherhood and homesteading, it's not for everybody. And I lost a lot of followers. And it was really heartbreaking because some of the people that unfollowed me were people that I had built relationships with. But because they were so heavy in the travel niche, like they were usually other travel bloggers, they just weren't interested in seeing my content anymore. And it's fine. I get it. But what's interesting about the travel blogger niche is that you can't travel forever. Like, I mean, you can. Okay, you can. But I think very few people, like travel couples, like travel bloggers, are forever globetrotting because it's not necessarily the most sustainable lifestyle. It just isn't. It's really taxing on your mental health to always be living out of a suitcase. That being said, we did it for 2 years and then we came home and I lost a lot of followers, but the people, it's interesting. It's almost like that quote, like the true people who are in it for you will stay with you, who like really resonated with your personality. And I think that's what it is. Like, you become, one of the beautiful things about Instagram is that you make these almost like real life friends. And I've made a lot of real life friends from Instagram. Like, I even hate that term, like we're friends IRL, like, or I'm meeting up with my Instagram friends. Like, no, these are real friends that you chat with every day. I chat with people on Instagram sometimes more than I speak to my friends that I've known in person, like for a long time. So yeah, it was really hard losing all those followers and even the engagement on my content. Like, I'll be totally honest, like, doesn't have as much engagement as when I was traveling. When I was traveling, I used to get like 600, 700 likes on posts. And now, like, bless, I get like 240, 300 likes. Not that, you know, your life should not be measured on the amount of likes you get. Right. But it is hard as a creator when you start to see that engagement drop. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna ask, do you think it's a factor of the niche or I don't know, like, is it the engaged community that you were able to do? You said in the beginning that you had so much more time, so you were able to kind of interact with people a lot more in the DMs. So do you think that it was a factor of not being able to interact as much, or was it the pivot to a different type of content, and people that follow travel bloggers are much more engaged than people that follow food and mommy bloggers, for example?
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of both. And I also think that in the last 5 years, Instagram has really changed. I think a lot more with the advance. So let's get into a little bit of actually talking about content. So what's interesting also about the last 5 years is just the advancements of quality that iPhones and other phones have been able to make in the photography space. So what does that do? All of a sudden, everyone's content is starting to look the same. So while in the past, I shot on a professional camera, I shot on like a DSLR, and I like have like, right, you like go through all this editing through Photoshop, my content was different at the time. But now everyone has access to a semi-professional camera. The curve has lowered. So what are you doing to set yourself apart as a creator, like, how does your content look different? And yeah, to be honest, a lot of my content looks the same as other people's content. So what, what sets me apart? It's really, at least for me, I think it's just my personality. Like, I'm just different and quirky, and I have so many things I'm passionate about. So yeah, but it's definitely a lifelong, as any creator, it's like this lifelong relationship with yourself and who you are in that season of life. Like, yeah, I used to have a lot more time. Now I have a limit on my Instagram of 30 minutes a day.
That's not, crazy.
That's not who I was.
No.
Yeah.
It's so hard to be on all the time. And so that's another thing that I kind of wanted to get into a little bit is, how do you maintain the appearance illusion of being this influencer that you are, being on all the time? You essentially have to have a presence consistently, mm-hmm. daily, pretty regularly with your following in order to maintain your influencership, in order to maintain the brand deals that you've probably cultivated, and continue bringing in income and, you know, not only maintaining the relationships that you've done, but also growing new ones. How do you do that with a full-time job and an infant and a podcast and a farm?
You don't, but I guess somehow I have. I've actually, so yeah, again, I want to be really transparent in that one of the reasons why I have this 30-minute limit on my phone is because I think I'm addicted to social media and addicted to Instagram. And I truly mean that.
I truly think that there's not a single person out there in the world who can say that they're not.
Isn't that crazy? But I had to really put limits around myself, one of the things I started to do recently was leaving my phone downstairs instead of bringing it up to bed with me, because the addiction, like, to open up my phone and lay in bed and scroll is there, right? So now how do you give the illusion of still being online without being offline? So there's a lot of content creators do this, but a lot of people batshoot. So I work with a photographer. She comes to me every month and we just batshoot so many different outfits, different locations. And that's one of the ways that we can appear to have a consistent presence. I won't necessarily say a consistent aesthetic, because that is something I've always struggled with, like having that like perfect Instagram feed. Like, that's just not me. I haven't been able to attain that. But batshooting and then post and ghost. This is not a strategy recommendation. I would never recommend this for someone who wants to build their brand, but for someone working through not being online, but also still trying to do everything, like posting, have all your hashtags already done, and then ghost. And it sucks. Like, it sucks to think that way, because truly, I guess what I've heard, the best way to engage the algorithm is you engage for 30 minutes before, post, engage for 30 minutes after. I'm probably preaching to the choir. So when you break down all of the work that goes into a post, yeah, that's why creators charge so much. And that's why a lot of brands don't see the amount of work that goes in. And that's something that I've been bringing to my job, is that education around how can you get quality creators to want to work with you? Because it's so much as, like, when we're people talking to people, right? Like, that's right. In B2B marketing, like, I'm a B2B, like, I've worked in B2B marketing for such a long time, and a lot of people ask me, like, oh, how do you like it? Like, is it boring? And I'm like, no, it's not boring, because it's still, even though it's B2B, business to business, there's always a person at the end of it consuming your content.
Yeah.
So it's always humans, and influencers are the same way. I think a lot of brands don't see the influencers as people. They merely see them as, you know, influencer X in niche this with this many followers. Like, they see them almost like as a numerical figure in a content engine.
Yeah, they're just another tactic for them. You know, they're like, here's a Google ad, here's an influencer, here's a YouTube ad, here's a commercial.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's I get it, right, because I'm on the brand side. And I see it that way too, but it's also seeing them as human beings. Mm-hmm. So I deviated from your question.
No. But you kind of answered it too. I like this kind of conversation that we just kind of flow in and out. So it's totally fine. I want to kind of touch on something that you talked about. Obviously, from the creator perspective, there's so much that goes into a post, a single post. I want to talk about like that brand partnership from both sides. How does it look? What exactly does it look like? Maybe for someone that wants to get into the space, or maybe someone that's like wants to pivot a little bit, or a brand out there looking that's to start working with influencers, for example. How does it look like from the brand perspective, but also from the creator's perspective, when the two partner up together? Sometimes it, you kind of mentioned, sometimes it's a DM that says, hey, I'll send you my shirt. If you wear it, you'll get exposure on my partnerships. But in order to have like a truly meaningful brand partnership, what does that look like? And how do you think that that would work?
Yeah. So let me start on the influencer side. So someone who wants to start to work with brands, my biggest recommendation is to up-level your content quality, because that is the number one thing that brand managers look at, is they're going to look at your feed alongside a lot of different influencers' feed, and they're going to make a snap decision. So having that first impression be like right off the bat of, okay, this person would be perfect for my brand. So in your mind, like, decide what kind, who are your dream brands, and like, who do you want to work with? And then model, it's almost scientific, right? Modeling your feed or your persona or your story to the brands that you want to attract. Also use the keywords that a lot of these brands might be looking up, because a lot of the ways that brands find influencers are through traditional hashtag research and keyword research. So for example, yeah, this morning I was typing, and there are tools, there are a lot of different tools that essentially do the same thing and aggregate results. But for example, this morning, very traditionally, I was typing into YouTube, system administrator blogger. Like, I was typing in like a job role and then like blog. Or think about that whole bringing in, yeah, that digital marketing SEO knowledge. What are these brands going to be searching for? Who are they going to be searching for? And then modeling yourself to look like that. Maddie James, who is have you heard of her? She's like a, she's like an influencer coach. But something that she said that I really like is that you got to practice before you play. So you can't start blogging, like, although you don't have to have a certain number of followers to start working with brands, but what you do have to have are examples to show of your work. So even if that's practicing telling a story with a product that you really love for free, right? It doesn't even have to be like, oh, I worked with Domino's on this. It could just be like my actual love of Domino's and telling the story of how Domino's makes your life easier as a mom because every Friday you order it, right? So it's all about that storytelling. And then now bringing it to the brand side. So yeah, when a partnership starts to happen, there are a lot of different ways that brands can work with influencers. So there's through agencies, which operate independently. So for example, a brand like mine would work with an agency who then sources influencers. Agencies, right, are not platforms. Then there are the platforms. So you probably have heard of them yourself, like Maverick, Coley, mm-hmm, Four. These are some of the big, and there's Massive Sway, Clever. There's a lot of different platforms out there. And what these platforms are is a brand will upload their campaign brief, and then influencers will apply. So it's almost like a job board for influencers. And so those are two of the ways that influencers and brands can work together. And then the third way is just by direct outreach. And which, right, I have done all three, and a lot of brands do all three. I've directly contacted influencers and said, hey, love your content, watched your unboxing video, thought it was really great. I'll usually make a little joke to like make it personal that's good advice for a brand, is make it personal. I understand, yeah, you're doing this at scale, and it's really hard when you're pitching influencers all day long to make it personal. But what brands don't understand is that influencers are getting pitched all day, every day. So why would they want to work with your vitamin company over your competitor vitamin, right, company? And it might be so simple as that you have that one vitamin company might have a more personal relationship. And then of course there's cost, but
of course,
yeah.
But I also think it's the other thing about what you just said is sometimes brands have it in their mindset that, an influencer would be lucky to work with us. And we are the ones that are picking the influencer that we work with. But it's sometimes the opposite, where to your point, like an influencer is getting hit on both sides from you and your competitor. So you really need to do the work to stand out as a brand, to want the influencer to want you, to want to represent you.
Yeah, that is a very old school mentality when brands think that this ex influencer would be lucky to work with you. That is not the world we live in. Maybe in the era of when PR boxes and right, because if we think about the evolution about how we got to where we are today, it started off with traditional bloggers, which mommy bloggers paved the way.
Correct.
For influencer marketing. It was enough back then to get a pair of shoes for free or to get a PR box of all your favorite products. And maybe sometimes some of the bigger ones would get paid. But now where we are today, girl, everybody getting paid. So what makes your brand different? And how can you offer up? What else can you offer, like, in terms of partnership? Is it a long-term partnership? Is it will drive traffic to your videos in addition to getting paid, right? So it's always it's an exchange of goods. A lot of brands also don't understand that influencers are creating content. They are basically an extension of your content marketing team. And look at it as that and invest in that. Because if you were to hire a photographer to shoot your product in 8 different outfits with 8 different models in 8 different locations, that's going to be a huge budget.
Well, it's hire a photographer and then hire a videographer and then hire the editors for it. And then like, and then hire copywriters to copy it. Again, back to all the different jobs that a single influencer does. If you break it down in terms of traditional advertising, think of it as you're shooting a commercial. When you do a story post or a reel or a YouTube ad, for example, you're shooting a commercial. You're then basically shooting a print ad. And you're hiring copywriters to copy, to do all of that work. You're taking the work of all of these different roles and plummeting it into one person. Yeah. So you have to think about it that way and like not just compensate that way, but remember that like there's more to it than just, hey, can you just talk about my product in your story?
Yeah, and a lot of brands don't give enough runway for influencers to create quality content. I worked with a brand recently that sent me a box of products to shoot and gave me 3 days to shoot and submit. And I'm like, but I can't. Like, I physically cannot turn this around in 3 days because I need a photographer and I need to storyboard and I need to, like, even if I am my own photographer, I need that time. I need to storyboard. I need the outfit, the hair and makeup. There's so much that goes into it that a lot of brands don't understand.
Yeah. And you need to carve out, I mean, everything that you just said, aside from that, the physical time that it takes to actually sit there and take a photo. It's not as simple as just holding your phone up to your face and taking a selfie with the product, because if that's the quality that they wanted, then they wouldn't have come to you specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So it's a very interesting space, and I'm looking forward to see like where it goes.
Yeah, especially as it evolves. The thing that I find interesting is when you think of influencers, and you kind of touched on it a little bit in the beginning, was within different channels too, because nowadays when you think about an influencer, you really think about your Instagram influencers, a little bit now with TikTok because it's a new platform, but it really started with Twitter, and there's influencers now on LinkedIn and on Facebook and all the different channels. You can be an influencer on one platform, or you can be an influencer on a multitude of these platforms. So it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic shifts too, and whether as a company you invest in a single person that can do it on multiple platforms, or you invest in multiple people that can do it well on one platform too.
Yeah, and I think this perspective will vary brand to brand, but I know that at least for what Cisco, where I work, we are looking for influencers who built a community across several platforms. So we like to call them our multi-channel influencers. And I'll give you a good example of that. So it's someone who is an Instagram influencer who also posts YouTube videos, who might also have a Facebook group. Right. And that's a lot of work on the creator side, right? Like that is a ton of work. But these are the type of influencers that we are looking at. And I think the industry is going to start looking at too, because we want to be able to touch all of these different audiences in the different channels. Because a lot of people who consume YouTube aren't necessarily the same people that consume Instagram all day. They're very different channels, or Twitter, like you mentioned. And I think what's interesting for advertisers and marketers to remember too, and even for influencers, is that there's, have you heard of the whole cookieless future bit?
Yes.
Yes. So as we move towards a cookieless future, it is going to be more difficult for brands to do paid social and retarget people who visit different websites. Where is that budget going to go? We might start to pull budget from paid social and move it into influencer marketing, which is a very real thing that is happening across a lot of companies. So as we do that, so influencers, I think, should take note and don't put all your eggs. I think don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't let that be Instagram, because I will also say that at least for us, we've shifted a lot of budget from Instagram to TikTok. And I think that's where a lot of companies are going. TikTok also just created this creator marketplace where a lot of brands can now search influencers. And that's huge, because that does not exist on Instagram.
No, and that's crazy that it doesn't exist yet. Because, like, especially when you think of essentially what the purpose of Instagram has become lately, like, the fact that something like that doesn't exist and brands can't have that direct link into an influencer like TikTok can, it's crazy to me. I don't know. It's funny that you mentioned though that cookieless future thing, because for someone like me, I have a deep background in personalization.
Oh, cool.
And like, I like the insights and I like the thought of being able to retarget someone based on what I know about them and getting all their cookie information. So that scares the crap out of me, to be totally blunt. Because I'm like, how am I going to be able to truly target and personalize an ad? I'm going to have to dive into what influencer marketing is, I guess.
I think that's a reality. It is scaring a lot of advertisers, and we just got to pivot. Like we were talking about in the beginning, digital marketing changes. Like if it's been printed, it's already different and changed.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
and even with Clubhouse, like think about the rise and maybe the question marks that comes with Clubhouse, because Twitter just came out with Spaces. Facebook just came out with an audio. I forget what they're calling it, but
what it's called.
Yeah, they came out with an audio as well. So are influencers going to want to continue to live on Clubhouse, or are they going to want to leverage the audiences they have already built on these other platforms? Because what's great about, like, for example, Twitter, I have like 4,000 followers. If I create a space like a Clubhouse, like an audio room, I already have a following there.
Right,
versus Clubhouse, I don't. So it's interesting to see, and on the brand side as well. So one of the very real-time decision I'm making is I have an influencer marketing campaign that I'm working on, and the decision is Clubhouse or Spaces. And I think we're going to go with Spaces because we have 70,000 followers on Twitter that we've invested in over time. So Clubhouse maybe isn't going to be where we're going to want to fill the room. It's just it's a very interesting time. And I think as a marketer, and I worked at the company I was at previously was very scared to try new things. And what I love about working at Cisco WebEx is that they're not afraid to test and learn. And I think that whole mentality is necessary in today's age. Like, you have to test and learn.
Yes, that is hugely, hugely, hugely important. And actually, my best friend that I was talking about that went to Bentley, she works in user experience research, but really in research in general. And that's something she was on a couple episodes ago, but that's something that we talk about all the time, is the ability to be able to pivot quickly from the learnings that you get is hugely important, and not to invest so much money and time, really time, into one direction that you're going in because it could end up changing so quickly. Like, yeah. Yes, Clubhouse was this giant like tsunami tidal wave that just came in and took over the world in the past couple of months. It's just as quickly starting to fade. And I'm seeing it like basically disappearing already based on all these other platforms that are starting to come up with their own audio tools. So I agree with you. It's really interesting. And I think it's interesting from both perspectives to think about that too. Not only as a brand, being able to test and learn and pivot based on what you're doing, but also as an influencer, to your point, being a multi-channel influencer, being able to show up on different platforms and being able to say, okay, I've grown a fantastic TikTok following. I've grown a fantastic Instagram following. I have a decent YouTube channel. Now I need to start figuring out how to channel all those into an audio platform, for example. And can I do the same thing and have the same type of following and the same type of influence that I've developed in these channels, in this other channel that brands are starting to look at? And so needing to be on the cutting edge of everything that's going on is really interesting too.
Yeah. And of course, it all depends on everyone's goals. So the influencer's goal and the brand's goal. But as an influencer, like really working backwards from what is your goal, if your goal is your goal brand, big brand partnerships, right?
Right.
Is it? And if it is, then it makes sense to invest in time and energy in bringing your audience through these different platforms and then also offering your audience a different piece of you. So one of the reasons why a lot of creators become podcasters is because it gives them another way to authentically communicate with their audience in maybe a more personal way that they can't talk to you on Instagram stories. So I don't want influencers to feel pressured by like, oh, you have to be on every single platform. It just really depends on what your goal is. If you're a full-time content creator, then it's different than someone who might have a full-time job and then also have it as a side hustle or for fun. Because that can get overwhelming. And I'm speaking from personal experience.
I was going to say, yeah, you definitely can have like personal stories for that.
Yeah. I had something personally that I just went through was a big realization that I don't necessarily want to work with brands anymore. And I guess that's not like a black and white statement. Like I still want to work with Fabletics because I love their workout clothes. But I think I was working almost as if I was a full-time content creator, but I'm not. I don't I have a full-time job that I love and I want to invest in that. I don't. So that was big for me because like sometimes you want to do all the things. Like you're like, type A. Like I'm type A. Like I want to excel my job. I want to excel in this podcast. I want to excel on Instagram. I want to work with brands. But it's not a sustainable strategy. I think that's a good question for everybody to ask themselves. Like, is what I'm doing today sustainable? Can I do it for 5 years? Right?
Yeah.
And for me, I was working until midnight every night. Was not sustainable.
No, that sounds crazy to me.
No.
Even just everything that you're dealing with, having a farm sounds crazy to me because I would not be able to do that. I feel like just having a baby at home and a dog is enough for me. You have little chickens and all sorts of farm animals.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
Livestock is a little bit less different, like less needy than like a dog. Like
really?
Dogs are so needy. Like at least my chickens, like you let them out every day, they graze and they come home every night and put themselves to bed. So it's a little less work than like a dog that you have to like actively feed.
True. Okay, I want to be cognizant of the time. Do you have a hard stop?
I don't have a hard stop.
Okay.
But I do have to go soon.
That's fine. We can wrap this up. Is there anything else influencer-ish that you want to talk about? And then I have just a couple fun questions. I like to wrap things up at the end with some fun questions and then, you know, we can chat about anything else.
Sure. So maybe the last thing that I would love to give from a brand perspective to influencers is that brands often have criteria that they use to choose influencers. So as a creator, it's great to keep this in mind. So for example, some of the things that we look at, and I'm I'm looking at a slide that I put together for this, but
I love this.
We look at audience size, content quality, audience engagement. Is your audience authentically engaging with you? Influencer niche. So is it very clear from your profile if you're, say, lifestyle and fashion or fashion and food, right? Like, is it very clear? Can we tell that at a first glance at your feed? And then for us, at least at Cisco WebEx, we are very proud to be very diverse and inclusive. So for us, that is something that we look at. We look at make sure that your profile doesn't have any hate speech and that you are inclusive.
Hugely important now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then our
which is crazy to me that even think that that's something that a brand should worry about. But I mean, yeah, in today's society, especially, it's something that you need to have at the top of mind.
Yeah. If brand safe is another criteria that we usually look at, is this person brand safe? Do they talk about and that doesn't mean for everyone listening, that doesn't mean that you can't talk about social justice. Like, for example, we like at WebEx, we're okay about you speaking about what's important to you, but we're just not aligned with hate speech. And that's just what our brand is. So it's interesting as a creator, when you're navigating those waters, how do you talk about the things that you care about without isolating brands? You know what? You might isolate some brands by talking about what you care about, but that is not a reason to not talk about them. Like, as a creator, definitely stand up for the things that you care about. And then content rating system. So once we get content, this is how we decide if we want to work with the same influencers again. We look at the production quality. So that goes to that content quality bit. Originality. Is it something that we've seen before? Is it a copycat basically of all the other content that we've seen? Creativity, kind of along the lines of originality, to pull off what you did, did you think outside the box? And then relevance. When we gave you the campaign brief, did you make it contextually relevant to your audience? So does it fit with your overall story, or was your audience kind of shocked and surprised that you were talking about our brand? So those are just for influencers to keep in mind. Those are some of the things that we look at, and I'm sure that other brands look at as well.
Yeah, I think the last bit, the relevancy bit, is something that's super interesting. I've just noticed that there's been, I don't know if you follow, I think her name is like Corporate Natalie or something like that.
No.
Okay, she's like a corporate meme influencer Instagram. I've send you some of her stuff.
I've probably seen her.
You probably have. She's hysterical, and I'm obsessed with her reels. But she just got I could tell because I have an eye for this kind of stuff. She just got a brand partnership with some webcam company, and so some of her reels just started incorporating that into it. And it's funny because she did it so seamlessly that I didn't even notice the first time I saw it. I was like, that's a great partnership that she did. And it was really cool because, you know, it's just another one of her reels that she was just talking, and it just flowed so naturally. It just made sense. So it wasn't like all of a sudden she pivoted and started to like talk about fit tummy tea or something like that.
Oh God, the fit tummy tea, or like the honey bear care, like deer.
Yeah. Yeah.
All like the bachelor influencers would get.
Yep.
You know, another creator that I think is really special is Remy. I can't pronounce her last name. Remy Ishikur. Let me pull her up because she is truly amazing. The way that she does brand partnerships, they fit in seamlessly. Remy Ishizuka. She is a co-founder of this company called Homebodies. I'll like send you her profile afterwards.
Yeah.
But for example, she worked with Logitech, and even though she's like a fitness and lifestyle influencer, she was able to talk about tech so seamlessly, and that's how it helps her run her business. So it was just so interesting. And I think as influencers, look to creators like that who are creating content that feels really authentic to themselves.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. It shouldn't be a stretch to start promoting this.
Yeah, if it's a stretch, and you know what? If it's a stretch, maybe you should ask yourself if this is the right brand that you want to work with.
One last thing that it just started, one last question that I have that just popped into my brain is, how do you think that, so we've seen major corporations like Nike, for example, get into hot water based on some of the talent that they've associated themselves with, and that for some reason, either that talent does something negative and they have to pull their sponsorship deals from them and stuff like that. How do you think that something like that is going to affect the influencer space from a brand perspective? Like, let's say, I don't know, let's say, for example, some brand decided to back taking care of babies. And with the whole issue that she just came out with recently, how would a brand be able to kind of pivot that? And like, how would a brand respond to that? Or how is that something that a brand should be looking for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it depends on the brand, because a lot of brands are, I guess, like people, have different value systems and different pillars of what they believe in. And I think it'll be different for, like, taking care of babies will probably find brands that align with her value systems and that she'll be able to work with. Now, if you worked with an influencer who you learned, maybe a brand partnered with an influencer, they posted their content, and then they learned that their values don't necessarily align, I think the brand safe thing to do would be to pull down the post and to, like, and to not work with that influencer again. And that's just, that's my personal opinion, but I think it would be directly in line with what my team would think as well.
Yeah, so, makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess, like, in line of, you know, talking about what you care about, I don't think influencers should not talk about, I feel like influencers should be transparent in what they talk about and what they believe in if that's what they want to do. But then don't be surprised if certain brands don't want to work with you. But, but just own it. I think it's better for someone to own their beliefs and rather than pretend to be someone that they're not. Because the truth always comes out.
I love that. That's so true. All right. Well, before we jump on to the fun, I only have like a couple of fun questions for you. Plug where people can find you, and actually talk about your podcast, because we didn't get to that either.
Oh yeah. I was so stuck in like my like other persona that
I know, right?
I forgot who I am on by mid-afternoon. So I am the host of the New Mamas podcast. It's a podcast to talk about taboo topics surrounding motherhood. So that's everything from miscarriages to infertility to divorce to loss, postpartum depression, mental health. So all of the topics that kind of make you go, that's what I want to talk about. And just to make mothers feel less alone. And it's just stories from real moms. So we have stories from everyone from the CEO of Dreamland Baby to other co-founders to your everyday mom. And that's what I really love, is the representation and the diversity that I have in my podcast guests so far is something I'm really proud of, because I really am passionate about displaying voices from all walks of our beautiful life. So that's so you can find me on any listening device, the New Mamas podcast by Lena Forrestal, and then my personal Instagram handle is at Lena Forrestal. And yeah, that's it. I mean, you can go to lenaforrestal.com and connect with me on other social media too. Thanks for asking, Tiffany. I was not ready.
God, of course. I love your podcast, because I love that. And I obviously, that's why we're here. It's just plug away and make sure that, you know, you get the platform to share what you're working on too, because you're working on so much that you need to be able to share that as well. And with your podcast specifically, I enjoy listening to it, obviously, as a new mom. But also, like, I enjoy the amount of the diversity in your speakers and in your guests, but I also enjoy the diversity of the topics that you cover. So one second I was listening to one of the episodes about diapers, and then I listened to the other episode about starting your little one on food, on like their first foods, which is very, very timely for me because my baby is just starting out on foods.
Aww.
I know, he's in that stage. It's so fun.
So
and then, yeah, I was scrolling back and there's so many different topics that, and this is something that you just started too. So it's so cool to have a resource. And as a new mom and someone who's may or may not have had postpartum anxiety, not diagnosed, but might have probably had it
100%.
Probably.
Yeah. If you think you did, you did.
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of those things where I was like, I probably do, but I'm going to like write on the sheet like less numbers because I don't want to like have to go through the whole process of talking to the doctor about it. And that's a whole other thing. But as a new mom, the first thing that I did was I sought out these different platforms, these different conversations that were out there. And I looked for Facebook groups. I looked for podcasts. I looked for YouTube videos. I looked for everything. And there's not enough out there. There's a lot out there, but there's not enough. And the interesting thing about your podcast is the way that you gather the stories and the way that you connect with people resonates so well to an individual like me who is just wanting to consume and learn everything, because obviously I want all of the resources to be able to validate what I'm feeling and to learn more because I don't know anything yet. So I appreciate the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. And I totally, yeah, there's a lot of people. This is advice for like anyone. Don't not do something because there's already so many people doing what you want to do, because you have a unique voice and perspective, yes, of the world to share. So that's, yes, I love that. Thanks, Tiffany.
Yes. I love it. Yes. All right. So let's get into some fun questions. So these are going to be just rapid fire.
Okay.
And it's only a couple of them anyway. So I know you got to go run soon. So let's start out by doing morning, noon, or night. Which one's your favorite?
Morning, for sure.
I pegged you as a morning person.
Yeah.
I'm the total opposite. Yeah. All right. So similarly, sunrise or sunset?
Ooh, sunrise.
Yeah. Again, I'm the opposite. I'm sunset. What is a fashion trend that is popular now that you just don't get?
Okay. This is hard because like I kind of like to adapt to new fashion trends. Okay. But the middle part is something that I'm very passionate about. I am like 2006 like ex emo like girl sidecar,
yes.
Like lots of heavy eyeliner, Hot Topic, crying over boys in skinny jeans, like that was so me. So I feel I feel personally attacked by people saying that the side part is out of fashion.
I mean, clearly I agree.
Girl, look at us go.
I know. I'm surprised that you said that and I never thought about that, but yeah, it's totally the emo phase of like putting your entire head, like covering your forehead with your hair parted to the side. Yeah, you're so right. That's exactly the phase that it stemmed from. Yeah.
And my son was born with like a heavy side part. So I'm like, oh my God, was it like genetics from like all the years of my husband and I? Because my husband was also like same kind of kid, like skinny jeans, huge side part. Maybe, I don't know.
It's genetics.
The side part is genetic.
Oh, man. Okay. So the next couple of ones I picked, very relevant to you. Since you're basically on a farm, you are on a farm. What animal would you want to be reincarnated as?
Oh, God. What animal? Probably a dog, but only if the dog was in like a nice family like ours.
Yeah. Agree. Not a mangy dog, like a golden retriever that's loved and can sleep all day and play. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could learn a foreign language in an instant, what foreign language would you like to learn and why?
Ooh, I would love to learn Thai because we lived in Thailand and I think it sounds so beautiful. And it's a very, very hard, difficult language to learn. It's tonal. So for example, In English, if we say the word door, if we say it door, 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 we said the word door. But in tonal languages like Thai, that would mean three different words.
Oh, wow.
So door or door, door, three different words. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fun fact.
Fascinating. Yeah, I did not know that. I would never have known that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't even know tonal languages was a thing.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? That's, yeah, it's so difficult. That's why if I could learn it in an instant, I would.
That's smart. I like that. All right. If you could change careers right this second, what would you change? What would you?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think I would love to learn how to be a vet because I do love animals. I know that's so like 180 different than like what we do, but like being on a farm, like we've had a chicken sewed up. Like one of our chickens got attacked by our dog. We brought it to the vet, sewed her up. Like I'm not very squeamish with blood and stuff. So I think being a vet, being an animal lover, that would be really interesting.
Fun fact, that's what I used to want to do when I was a kid.
Oh my god.
Until I realized how much science I had to learn.
Yeah, a lot of science, and I think it can also be a very sad, very very yes. sad job as well, so.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But it can also be really happy too.
Yeah, so. Really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is the last question, and this is a question that I ask everyone, is if you could pick a theme song for your life, what would that theme song be?
It's this one song in 500 Days of Summer that I really like. Oh my god, what's it called? Hold on, give me like one second to like, because I love this song. Isn't that funny? I don't even know like my favorite song, but it's like a song that so defines me. 500 Days of Summer song. Oh my god, it's by like Hall, I think it's Hall and Oates. Oh, You Make My Dreams. You make my dreams,
you make my dreams come true.
Yeah, yeah, I love that song. Like I could like dance that song every single day. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so funny because when I ask this question of everyone has such a completely different answer, but it so fits their personality when they say it to me, so it's so interesting.
That's a great question. It's so what you. About you? What would be your song?
So there's a song by Incubus that I think it's called I Wish You Were Here. And there's very specifically a certain line in there that it's funny because it was like my yearbook quote too. But it's still true to this day. And the line is, how does it go? Life's a roller coaster and I'm not strapped in. I should be holding tight, but my hands are busy in the air. I know, right? Isn't it so awesome?
Oh my god. I love that.
Yeah.
So I love that.
That's mine.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite quote of all time. But yeah, it's funny because I don't listen to a lot of Incubus. I do like that song, but it's not really a song that like anyone that knows me would ever pick for me. They'd be like, oh, probably a Taylor Swift song or like some other country song or something like that, depending on my mood. But like, no, that was the song that I kind of resonated with my whole life. So
how funny. Anyway. I mean, it's the same for me. Like I don't listen, like obviously I don't listen to Hall & Oates. I don't even know the name of the song, but like, yeah, like I love a lot of punk. I listen to a lot of country. I listen to a lot of pop. Like people would be probably surprised to hear that I like picked that song too. But it's such a song that's like so happy and crazy and fun. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this has been so much fun and I can't wait to continue chatting, and I love that you live so close to me so that eventually we can actually hang out in real life.
You live outside of Westfield. Yeah, no, we should 100% get together sometime. I would love that.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Because I'm always out that way. My sister lives not too far from you. She lives in Clinton, so
right. Oh, Clinton. My god, Clinton's like right here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun. Wait, and we're like exactly the same age, right? Are you 32?
Yeah.
Oh my god. I love Instagram because I think I found you on Clubhouse.
I think so.
Going full circle here with the Clubhouse conversation, which I had to mute on my phone. I officially like turned off notifications for Clubhouse because it was like too addicting. But I think I heard you speak and I thought you were really cool. And I think I might have heard you mention you were from New Jersey. And I was like, oh, let me look. Yeah.
That's usually the way that it is. I love that.
Ugh. Me too.
I do love Clubhouse for as much as I hate it.
Yeah, I know. I've made like so many great connections on Clubhouse, but it's just a time suck too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a very big time suck.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of time suck, this has been amazing. I want to let you go. Thank you so much for your time and for doing this with me. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Bye.